We're talking about the life and times of J.L. Tucker today. I'm here with co-host Ed Jannod.
Morning, there, Randy.
Ed, before we get too deep into it, you've mentioned a couple of things. What is the Legacy Peer Group?
Peer Support Group. One of the things a lot of people in America don't know, that 6% of America is veterans. Less than half of 1% are combat vets. Try to find a peer once you leave the service. It's pretty difficult. And a lot of times when you get back, and we're seeing the same thing from the Iraq and Afghanistan vets, they need a camaraderie. They need somebody to talk to who really understands what it is. Mo Armstrong started Peer Recovery 14 years ago. He's the founder of Vet to Vet USA. What it is, the V, we put it in steps. One of the first things we hope the veteran does is go get help.
Okay, so JL came to you guys.
Yep.
Looking for help.
Yep. So he had his individual therapist. You need a little bit more than that as you're starting to feel better. So the next step is to go to a group. We're not VA employees. We're not therapists. We're not counselors. We're peers.
Okay. And so as guests today, on this segment of the show, we've got three people from JL's family. Matter of fact, we've got a whole room full out here. About 10 people from JL's family. Children and grandchildren and spouse. So we got Christy Mashburn.
Hi.
Daughter.
Youngest daughter.
Helen Tucker, spouse.
Yes.
And she, I don't know your last
Michelle
name.
Michelle Watt.
Okay.
Watt.
W-A-T-T. Okay. Let me ask both of you a question. I don't want y'all to answer it yet, okay? But I would like to start with you here in a second, Helen. When did you know that JL was having trouble struggling with things he did in the Vietnam War? Do you remember
We got married in 67. I guess immediately after we got married, because we hadn't been together that long until we got married. And he was real nervous, worried, cry, and everything. And he would tell me what happened, you know, when he's in Vietnam and everything. And he had just struggled, you know, most of his life with this. Like you say, Dr. Richardson, Jill had come talk to him, and he sent Jill to the Legacy Peer, Ed and Freddie. I can't remember all their names. They have really helped him. They had really, I mean, he just felt like a family. Okay. That's what it was like. And he could talk to them, you know, about things.
Okay, and JL in his service didn't do anything wrong. He did exactly what he was ordered to do. So it wasn't guilt.
Mm-hmm.
What was it?
Well, I guess it's mental, because he would have nightmares, and, you know, if he was, you know, like laying down or whatever, you'd have to let him know that you was in the room, because he was always afraid and stuff. And actually, he struggled with it for 4 to 6 years.
He was self-medicating for 46 years, right?
Yeah, yes.
Just doing what anybody would do. They would be looking for relief, and you don't know when the trigger's going to come in. You don't know from what direction it's going to come from. You don't know why or where, you know, or what it's going to be, but you're going to always be on guard for these little triggers that are going to come in and set you off or make your memories come back or upset you, and you just never know.
Yeah.
And he never went for help for, 40-some years, right?
No, until he came over to Dr. Richardson. He sent him to the peer center with Ed now. Yep. And after that, he found somebody he could talk to, you know, had went through some of the same things he did. Mm-hmm. And everything. And it really helped him.
Are you saying that he went... How long did he go before he sought help, and how long was it before he knew he could have help?
Well, I guess 47 years.
Wow.
Or 46, something like that, because we got married in 67.
What a heavy load to carry.
Yeah.
But it was pretty hard on him when he first started, right?
Yes,
most of us that go to the peer support,
those
first couple months are really tough. He came home questioning, I guess you guys questioned if it was getting better, right?
Yes, he talked to me and tell me, you know, things. Mm-hmm. And if there's anybody out there that needs help, they need to come and get it.
Yep.
How would they get in touch? If you have a veteran out there that needs help, in the Legacy Peer Group, do you have to be Vietnam?
No. We have from Korean up to Afghanistan vets. Yep.
Okay. You folks out there listening here, in a few minutes, I'm going to ask Ed to give us the information that we need to contact you, but I want to go on to the girls here in a minute. Let's start with you, Shelley. When did you know your father was having issues with the Vietnam War?
He'd been having them about ever since I was little, probably about 10, 11, 12, something like that.
Well, what did you think? What did you think was going on?
He was having issues with the war and stuff, so.
Well, how did it come out would it come out the way he acted towards you?
Or? Yeah. He was he was acting like angry and like he had stuff on his mind, and you can tell that he had stuff on his mind, but he just wouldn't talk about it.
Well, why, you know, and you think about it, you know, why would a man tell his daughter what had happened? I mean, those are not things that you can sit down and say to a young girl, you know, I'm upset because what I had to do in the war. So he was probably protecting you, and it showed when he was putting up a defense, it looked like it was being angry or mean when he was actually trying to hold it in and protect you from it.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of times whenever we were growing up, I mean, we just didn't talk about. We really didn't even know Daddy was in the war. He was not. We didn't celebrate Veterans Day or anything like that. He just never spoke of it. It was only the last 4 or 5 years we started realizing that he had, that's where his issues were coming from. We couldn't walk in the room if he was asleep because he would jump up and defend himself, or he started drinking when I was young.
Yeah, that too.
He covered, you know, his pain with alcohol, basically. But
that's the self-medication you were talking about.
Yep.
It was only until a couple of years ago that we just kept telling him that he needed to go get help, because talking about it would, even though it would bring back a lot of pain, it would help him. And it did. We wondered the first couple months if he had not made a mistake by going to the group, because it actually made him worse at first.
Because things were coming out?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really hard.
Yeah, he was crying. He was crying a whole lot more. It's like he would bury it, and he would be okay, even though it came out in us growing up. We weren't allowed to go anywhere, or
he was always afraid something would happen to him. He was always overprotective.
Very much.
Yeah,
I think I spent the night with my first girlfriend when I was a senior in high school. No dates, no. We weren't allowed to go out and do anything.
In my interview with him, I asked him if he knew the guys that he worked with that day, or if he knew their names or had any contact with them, and he said no.
Yeah.
So there's probably 10 other J.L. Tuckers running around.
There's thousands of them. I also waited 40-some years before I went. When we start first going to the work groups with Dr. Richardson, all 23 of us went home angrier, more depressed. Dr. Richardson, just like we tell everyone that comes here, it's going to hurt a little bit, but you need to do that before you get better. What happened after he's... couple months you thought he made a mistake. What changed?
I mean, the more he got involved in the Legacy Peer Support Group, I mean, he started living at that point. He found Christ at that point, and his life was meaningful.
We lost our first vice president, or he resigned, and so we had a vice president position in Vet to Vet. And at the time, as you know, your daddy was pretty sick. He had a lot of different medical issues. He brought so much to everyone. When we talk about peer support, it's bringing your strength, bringing your stories. How did you get through the mission? He started feeling Christ. He started feeling the camaraderie and friendship. We asked him to be the vice president of our Vet to Vet. And I remember the look on his face, just like, fear. Holy mackerels, you want me to be a vice president? Maybe you could tell the story about how he became a president of Vet to Vet.
Okay, we'll get to that in just a minute. during the break, we were just kind of doing some small talk. I'm going to tell you all what I know about your father a little bit, okay? Because you just told me something.
Uh-huh.
But what I learned from him was that he was in Florida from a big family.
Mm-hmm.
And when you got to be 16, it was legal in Florida to leave school. And then you just told me the story about him, and then he and some of his friends were going to join the Army uh-huh. together. Used to could go in on the buddy plan. So he was 17 years old.
Uh-huh.
He told me, and maybe y'all don't know this, but he served in Korea for a year before
he
went to
uh-huh.
Vietnam.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So, you know, he served in the Army, and, you know, he was a child soldier.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time he got to Vietnam, and what I have learned about most Vietnam veterans is that at the time when they went to Vietnam, they didn't know the history, the politics, the power structures, the social situation at home, social situation in Vietnam. They you know, they were soldiers there to follow orders and do what they had, and they got a steady paycheck, and people told them what to do, and if they did all those things, everything was okay. Mm-hmm. So that's what tells me that, you know, when they asked for volunteers, you all said he raised his hand. Or Freddie said that, or did he ever talk about the day he volunteered?
Tell me
about it. What did he say?
When he volunteered?
To not knowing he was going into that Vietnamese battle, that Vietnam battle. Did he ever talk to you about the day they said, we need a volunteer to go get some work done?
Yes.
What did he say?
He said they had to, you know, ask for volunteers. He said, I raised my hand to go with them, do what I should do.
He didn't know what it was going to be, did he?
No, he didn't.
Ed, could you describe what it was he did?
No, I really couldn't. I can't even imagine. Freddie described it pretty much. If you saw the movie, like you said, that was excluded. So the wounded and body parts and the deceased were coming back, and J.L. and the other volunteers were the ones that had to remove them and separate them. He did that for quite a few hours. I thought it was 2 days.
Yes,
he did that for 2 days.
It was 48 hours.
48 hours. Nonstop.
Walked, left his warehouse job, went there for 48 hours, went through all the emotions of seeing these killed soldiers. He needed to clean them up. He needed to identify them, help identify them.
By their dog tags.
Uh-huh.
And then he had to pack them up in the body bags and get them ready to ship home.
That's right.
And
he never forgot that day either.
Of course not. There were hundreds of them.
Uh-huh.
He described to me that the first helicopter came in as kind of small. Then a bigger helicopter came in. And when the helicopter landing, there was blood coming out of the bottom of the helicopter.
Yes, that's what he told me.
Okay.
He said he just couldn't describe what it was like.
Problem was, you know, when it was over, when they said, okay, we're done here, he was told to go back to work.
Uh-huh.
And he took all those thoughts with him back into his job.
Uh-huh.
And again, he's still 19 years old. I'm 60. I still remember 19, I think. Do you remember 19?
Yeah, I do.
I was pretty dumb.
I was going to Vietnam when I was
okay.
19.
Okay. You don't have a lot of emotional experience when you're 19. So when you add this 48-hour experience on top of that and then combine it with coming home and getting married and having children and trying to work and knowing that at any time that hurt could reappear, or that, is it hurt or is it damage or what is it, Ed?
It's kind of all the above. We talk about recovery and resiliency, search to have a normal life. And what we have found is Vietnam vets, most of us were pretty young when we went there and really wasn't any help. We just went out there and did the best we could. We thought what we were doing was okay, or same thing, JL, we just self-medicate. But what I really like now is to see the young men and women coming back. They have the same type of issues with the moral injury, why me, how come it wasn't somebody else or whatever. But what they have is resiliency. So they could bounce back a lot. And what we've learned over the decades is that the Vietnam veterans really don't have resiliency. When you live 47 years, like Helen, you just said, JL has, and I and Freddie and the rest, when you live that way, that's the entire life. That's what you are. And when you become younger and you know about it, and that's what the blessing really is today, that there is help out there. They know how to help you, and the young men and women have more resiliency. Now, where they have trouble is the recovery portion. They can't deal with the triggers. It's right in front of them, so they need to learn that. Vietnam vets, we deal with the recovery. It's just taking us a lot longer. So we have an opportunity, and of course the Vietnam's motto is leave no veteran behind. So our service is dedicated to the men and women of these previous wars and make sure that they get every opportunity to get help.
Well, you know, and again, you got to remember now, this 19-year-old boy had served in Korea and then went to Vietnam. And what he told me was he started out as a supply specialist, which meant that you know, in a warehouse, he was ordering parts and making sure people had what they need. And it was a pretty safe, secure thing. He wasn't trained for combat. He wasn't trained for those things. He was trained to be inside that warehouse. At the time, I don't think he realized he wasn't very far from Cambodia. And I don't know. Michelle, what does Cambodia mean to you? Well, I know, you know, most people don't. A lot of people don't even know where Cambodia is on a map. And here he's 19 years old. He's near the Cambodian border, and the whole devil's about to break loose. The South Vietnamese generals had decided that they had to pick a fight with the American forces so that they could learn how to fight the American forces using American equipment. They weren't too upset with the South Vietnamese soldiers using American equipment. But they knew that when the American boys came in with their own equipment, it was going to be a different battle. They knew it was going to be prolonged. So they said, we have to pick a fight with these guys. That means that we have to give them bait, and we have to not worry about our losses. This is the Viet Cong, the enemy, talking about where your dad was. We have to be willing to die and get blown up and shot, and because we have to learn how these guys fight.
Yeah, it was the Vietnamese regular army. It wasn't the Viet Cong.
Okay, so they had to come in and tangle with the American soldiers. Your dad didn't know that. Nobody told him that. When they asked him for a volunteer, he didn't know what he was going to do. Emotionally, he didn't know what was ahead of him. And he did it. He did his job. And not one time have I heard that there were any complaints about his job. I mean, he did his job well. And then he went back to work with no counseling, no help. And it festered for, you said, 47 years?
Yes.
They were just sent back to their bunk, and I don't think they ever talked about it again.
Wow. I'd want to drink myself. That would bother me. We got to go to commercial break here in just a minute. But this was all happening to this 19-year-old boy. Mm-hmm. There weren't many other American boys that had that same experience at the time. And nobody there to counsel him, nobody there to coach him, nobody there to thank him, nobody there to reward him. You don't get a medal for loading bodies off a helicopter, do you?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. So, you should.
Well, you should, yeah, yeah. So those are the things that, you know, that we need to be aware of, and realize that over the next hour, we're going to talk about how those things affected your all's life and how we can offer help to other Vietnam veterans and I meet some of the other family. I don't know if the kids even know about their grandfather that way, but we'll talk about that in just a minute.